Greetings. Welcome to the How We Do Digital Ministry podcast. I'm Christopher Harris, founder of Faith Growth. You can find us at faithgrowth.com, where we help our church clients build their digital presence and engage with the communities online, their communities online, or I guess all communities, to be quite honest. On this podcast, I have a conversation with a church leader and ask them to share how they do digital ministry in their community. Today, I'm excited to be talking with Ryan Panzer. Ryan, please introduce yourself and tell us how you do digital ministry.
Hey, Christopher, thanks for the introduction and hello to all of you who are listening to this episode. My name is Ryan Panzer. I practice digital ministry by writing about how churches can connect with our tech-shaped culture and by walking alongside churches as they discern what the purpose of using technology in their ministry context might be.
Awesome. Well, tell us a little bit, I know you have credentials in the tech world as well as the church world. You used to work for Google, is that correct?
Yeah, that was actually my first job out of college. So at the time I was thinking about going to seminary and happened to fill out a job application at Google, and one thing led to another, and I wound up starting my career in the field of technology. And ever since, I've kind of been at this intersection of church and tech. They've always seemed like rather different worlds. I remember when I was working at Google and taking classes through Luther's distributed learning program, I was probably the only Google, if not only tech industry employee who was also getting a seminary degree at the same time. So just that feeling of that perhaps even isolation of being in these two worlds that seems so distinct has always made me feel a need or an interest to figure out how tech and church or tech in the world of faith-based organizations can learn from one another and perhaps find areas of intersection and overlap.
I like that. Maybe if you're like me, because did not work at Google, just FYI. But no, I've been doing tech since the early 80s. That's when I got my first computer. It was in 1982, actually. I was young, but I did have a computer. I think I was in second grade. I don't know. Anyways, I learned how to code in BASIC, but back then. And so this has always been a part of me. Grew up in the church. That was always a part of me. Served. And what I really like about COVID, actually, you know, a blessing found in all the destruction is that I feel like the church kind of finally came into my world in a predominant way, you know, when they really came online. And I'm starting, you know, I like, you know, that they're not so disparate anymore, these two worlds that I live in, that they're kind of playing together now. Have you experienced that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. And depending on the data that you look at, there are some estimates that perhaps as few as half of churches were online prior to the pandemic. Some estimates have said that only about half to two-thirds of churches were using social media prior to the pandemic. Current estimates are closer to 98-99% of churches that are using some form of technology. So there's been quite an acceleration there and quite a rapid interest in the topic of how technology can be used for ministry. And even taking a step back before the pandemic, I don't know that it was that churches weren't using technology at all. Rather, I think it was that churches saw technology as a billboard or even a bulletin board, as a place to post our address, our worship times, and you know basically how to find us somewhere else. But it was always pointing to church community that happened elsewhere, like, come on in and find us somewhere offline. The pandemic, we've been living through this time where churches have had to recalibrate because the web is no longer pointing somewhere else. You know, during some of these recent months, the web has been all we've had to connect as a church community. So there's been tremendous learning and tremendous acceleration into using digital technology. Now I think churches are starting to, you know, even perhaps tap the brakes on that a little bit and just think, how can we use this purposefully and sustainably moving forward? And what is God calling us to do and calling us to be online?
Yeah, and I think those are important questions. And that's where, like I was telling before we got started recording, I had started reading Ryan's book this week. And I think he asked some good questions and has some good framework for considering that in there. I haven't finished the book yet. But I will say where I thought you did a good job that I did read the whole article this week was, you know, last week there was a big New York Times. Well, I shouldn't say last week because it'll be a few weeks before people hear this. So in the beginning of August, the New York Times had a big article on Facebook and how Facebook has released a whole specific tools for religious communities to help, you know, use their platform to connect. And you wrote a follow-up piece that I thought was very helpful because you kind of went through what Facebook was doing, but then you gave some good questions for consideration, you know, for churches to decide how and how much of these tools they may want to use. Would you like to share any of the, your kind of your framework? Not necessarily does it have to be what was in that article about Facebook, but just how do you encourage churches to consider these things and figure out the best way to be using the tools to connect?
Yeah, that's a great question. So a few back in early August, the New York Times publishes this article, and the article was all about the launch of faith.facebook.com. And it's the first portal of its kind where one of the tech giants has really developed a suite of resources for churches to use to connect with their communities. And so at the very top of the list of what they've been developing are Facebook groups. And Facebook groups are different and distinctive than Facebook pages. When churches talk about using Facebook, most often what they're using is a Facebook page. A page is kind of functions like the yellow pages or to go back to that billboard analogy, it's here's when we're open, here's when we worship. But a Facebook group is designed to do something different. It's designed to bring people together in a shared space to have conversation. And to ask questions, to hear those questions answered in a community, to share learnings and to share stories. That's the resource that Facebook leads with in this suite of tools that they've been developing for faith communities are these Facebook groups. And I think in some ways that is a microcosm of what churches should be thinking about when it comes to using technology. Not just how we can build lots of shiny and flashy tools, but how we can convene conversations to bring communities together, to ask questions, to share stories, to articulate experiences of faith and how God has been acting in our lives and our world. That really is the secret to doing, I think, great digital ministry, is convening those conversations in the digital spaces where all of us spend so much time.
I like that. To me, the groups function, and I don't know many churches using a group this way, but I think it really could function a lot the way a lot of times a coffee hour does after service, you know, that sure. There's sharing, there's, you know, people, you know, asking for prayer. I mean, it's public, but it's not public to all of Facebook. It's only public to the church. So it is a little bit safer for certain types of sharing. You know,
that's right.
And, you know, at least kind of what you wouldn't be afraid to stand up at the microphone in the building and say is probably just fine to say in the Facebook group. But I like that it's a place where you can, not just the church can post, but the individuals can post. So you can right. see the church offering, you know, spiritual counsel or care, and then individuals checking in with one another. And, so yeah, I think the church. I think we are overusing pages and underusing groups right now.
That's the pivot that churches must make when it comes to using technologies, moving away from communication tools where information flows down a clean hierarchy from, you know, pastors, staff, through to the congregation, towards tools that create conversation and collaboration. That's a big pivot because. You know, you look at something like a church bulletin or a church website, those are tools for communication. But tools for collaboration are things like Slack and Facebook groups, even things like Zoom is a collaborative tool. Mm-hmm. So that's the learning curve we're on. I would say that we've gotten quite good at using tools for communication, especially during COVID when the only people that had access to the church building were largely rostered and ordained clergy as well as the staff. Mm-hmm. Now we have to figure out how to bring in those collaborative elements. You mentioned the coffee hours too. And really, I think that when we think about digital ministry, we're not thinking about moving away from face-to-face in-person coffee hours. Those are really important events in the lives of a church. What we're thinking about instead is how can that same connection that same conversational buzz that takes place over coffee and donuts every Sunday at 10 a.m., you know, take place Monday through Saturday. Exactly. On the moments that fit into the particularities of everyone's schedule.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. The church is intruding into the rest of my week, which is a good thing, you know, and the connections and the
I would say like one thing that churches have an opportunity to do is to give something to respond to throughout the week. You know, maybe it's a sermon or a video reflection or a reading or even just a set of images posted to the web, and invite members into responding and processing what those things have to do with our own individual walks with God and our own individual faith stories. I'm a big believer, to paraphrase the work of someone named Dave Daubert, who's written a lot about this topic, the idea that faith depends on being articulated and stories being told. Mm-hmm. And that's what the web gives us all, is the tools to tell our own stories, to respond to what's happening in our faith communities and where God is active there.
I think that's interesting. The faith, you know, we need to tell our stories. And when I look kind of at the secular world and how they're doing marketing these days, you know, when it's more individualized, and they come back to, it's all about the narrative, the brand narrative. And then ultimately, you know, the purchase would be, hey, they're having a transformational experience with the brand narrative with the brand. And I love that, because, I mean, I love is the wrong word. I feel like they ripped off good evangelism strategy, if that makes sense. I mean, we've always, at the core of Christianity and our faith story, is this story of healing, redemption, and transformation. And now they're trying, and the best brands, even they're including their customers in helping share their own stories with the brand, you know, and that's how all these direct-to-consumer companies are really flourishing right now. But it becomes about these individual stories. And I listen to how they're doing marketing right now, and I'm like, did they come to an evangelism conference? Or, And our problem is we don't know how to do it online yet very well as a church. We're learning. But anyways, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ryan.
I think that's an interesting model that you just addressed, because it shows how this model of storytelling and of sharing one's own narrative, it can be co-opted by any type of organization. Now, what your typical company is going to do is co-opt that story to show how the transformation comes from some kind of product or deliverable that the company sells for profits. But what the church provides is the ability to narrate one's own lived experience in the context of the gospel story. And so if we don't give our members of our community, the members of our congregation, the ability to tell that story, then I think there's always going to be the company or the corporation that's gonna co-opt narrative for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. So really, this is an opportunity for churches to, in some ways, observe what the world of business, the world of branding is doing, but then remember that we're not seeking the same transactional objectives. Rather, we're seeking this transformational encounter with Christ in our world.
Really want to go off on a tangent on atonement theories right now, but we're gonna stick to,
yes,
we're gonna stick to the topic at hand, digital ministry. We'll save that one for another day, but that's what just popped in my head.
Bring some Anselm of Canterbury into the conversation. Yeah.
Oh no, but I do agree with you. It's a good place. We can look and see how they're, you know, I think we already know the stories, but how do we do the technology, and especially through the technology, invite in the others, to our members and other people we're connecting with, to share their stories. And I think that's very important. I mean, we're people of the book after all.
We are indeed. Yeah. And I think there's so many models out there that show how an invitation to articulate stories can start. And it doesn't start with asking somebody to come give a 20-minute testimony at a worship service attended by thousands of people. Oftentimes it starts with a pastor or a facilitator or a convener of some kind asking for small reactions to a sermon or to a piece of scripture. And if you listen to a lot of podcasts these days, many times they have interview clips that are submitted by listeners. And they're just 15 seconds responding to a discussion prompt. And just that little 15 to 20 seconds, one, is a great way to round out the stories we're telling, but it also gives everyone in our community practice, you know, the ability to practice what their story looks like and to articulate that. And again, if we think that there's a connection between telling our stories and faith formation in our lives, that's something we have to find a way to offer to our communities.
I like that idea. We coming to a podcast soon, you might have, I do like that, that idea of invite 15 second clips. We might have to try that around here.
That's right.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
Well, listen to seasons 2 and 3 of a podcast I once listened to called The Liturgists. Is a really good example of where listeners call in and respond to these questions, which are then weaved into the narrative of the episode. And it's a good model for not just any, not just churches, but any convener of a conversation to listen to for how to extend an invitation to sharing one's own narrative and sharing one's own experience as part of a larger communal story.
I'm gonna have to go listen to that. Thank you. Kind of, you know, talking about these narratives and how it helps us, you know, form our faith and shape our faith. What, you know, what's, how have, you know, I love this question and I ask it about all of our guests. How have you seen God at work online, or how have you encountered God online?
Believe it or not, I think the way I've encountered God online is by the many tools that have been developed to give people a break from the frantic and frenetic pace of our world. So when I think about the resources that have been developed towards contemplative Christian practices, one that really stands out, it's a very basic one. It's Richard Rohr's daily newsletter, and how every day Richard Rohr sends this devotion, this reflection out to his millions of followers, who then get this very gospel-centered chance to pause and reflect and realize their connection to God and to one another. And you see this too with prayer apps, with meditation apps. But I think anywhere where the web offers a chance to disconnect and unwind, that creates experiences of Sabbath. And we don't often associate the web with Sabbath experience. But in many ways, being a platform where so many of us spend our lives, it's just crying out for experiences of Sabbath and rest and disconnection and grace. Anywhere where those things exist, God is at work. There are resources there are places that are making that happen. I mentioned Richard Rohr's newsletter, Luther Seminary's God Pause Devotion, even secular resources like the Calm app, which is used by so many. Each of those provides this momentary taste of grace, and that's where I really see God at work on the web.
Love that. Yeah, I do. You know, a lot of people think of the web as a distraction, and it definitely can be, but there is this whole other side to it. I mean, there are these resources.
Right.
It's important that we seek them out and participate in them, because I agree.
Well, you know, any resource on the web is just as much saint and sinner as all of us, to go back to some throwback Lutheran theology. And so someone asked me earlier this week, what do we make of Facebook creating these resources for faith communities? Should we be concerned, you know, $1 trillion corporation, the privacy and ethics concerns of using Facebook? And, you know, the answer is yes, we should be concerned about that. At the same time, we recognize that the individuals at Facebook creating these tools are no more saint and sinner than any of us.
Exactly. It's the tool. I mean, the tools can be used for good or bad, and they will be used for both because of humanity. I mean, that was, and I think we've seen that online, unfortunately, you know. Exactly. Because I know you've been talking with several different churches, you know, and since the book came out and things. I mean, what are you hearing kind of is the biggest need as far as digital is concerned? What are they questioning most right now? And, you know, what would your advice be to that, if you will?
The question that I hear the most is how we can make this sustainable. How can we do this in the long run? It's one thing to do church online when nobody's sitting in the pews. You know, buildings have started to reopen a bit. Some are fully open. How do we make this work in the long run? And that's, I think, one of the dangers when we talk about hybrid ministry as the combination of online and offline, then really what we're doing is we're setting ourselves up for a to-do list that's twice as long. And so that's why so many congregations I talk to, I'm encouraging them to think about using the web and digital resources as a tool for being invitational and using that as an invitation both to an existence on the web and also an existence that takes place in person. That idea of being invitational allows us to think about where we use the web to truly convene and sustain and uplift our communities and the things that don't do those things that maybe we can say no to. So when churches are thinking about what comes next, really what they're looking for is purpose. They're also asking questions of feasibility and sustainability, viability. And that's going to be the question for all of us as we look at, you know, an eventual return to normalcy, whenever it happens, it's going to take some asking some deep questions about what are we called to be online? How are we called to show up and present? What conversations are we called to convene? And where can we take a strategic step backwards, knowing that we're not called to use every app and every tool at all times and in all places?
I think that is why that's taking a step backwards is also wise, not just in the tech world, but in some of the, you know, I think as churches start coming back together, they would be wise to reevaluate a lot of their offline ministries as well as their online ministries. What can they step back? You know, what maybe we take two steps back here so we have time for, because you're right, it is hybrid is going to be double the list. And I'm not, double the set of instructions. And I think, well, and I will just tell you, I'm not a fan of the word hybrid yet. I don't know. I mean, I think it serves what everybody's thinking. And so, but I honestly think we won't be saying it in a year, because to me, it almost is, if you're going to go all in and make sure that you have online and offline kind of worship and things, then really we probably need to start talking about developing an online campus, if you will. Sure. And then that really does quickly bring you, there is going to be two to-do lists, you know, and they can be interacting. I don't think people that are saying hybrid right now are necessarily wrong. I think we're shifting and we're looking for the best language. And I think where we'll end up, I don't know how much I'm sold on hybrid, to be honest.
The metaphor I sometimes like to use is the idea of building a bridge between online and offline. You know, they're not distinctive campuses and distinctive identities in the life of a ministry, but there's parity of experience so that it's difficult to, you know, have a different experience, whether you're worshiping online or in the pews or attending a book study in a classroom or through Zoom. You know, it's the same quality of experience and the same depth of connection. If we can build that bridge between online and the offline, that to me is what effective digital ministry is all about. Not creating silos or specific online campuses.
No, I do like that. That's much better stated than what I did, how I stated it. No, because I like that, a parity of experience. Well, and the other thing that I think is important not to silo it like I did is that you're going to have people participate both ways. They're not just going to be, I'm just online or I'm just offline.
Correct.
They're going to be hopping back and forth. And so it has to be a parity of experience. Or they're going to go, well, this is not the same. This is, you know, this is, it's not going to be as meaningful and it's not going to create the community. So I'm seeing that in the church and through podcasts like this and your book and stuff, we're trying to have this bigger conversation, but I know some church leaders are having a hard time having that at the local level. Do you have any tips or advice for church leaders in that predicament?
Well, I could recommend a resource. So for convincing the skeptic of digital ministry, there's a great book by an author named Deanna Thompson. She's a professor at Hamline University, and she wrote a book called the Virtual Body of Christ in a Suffering World. And it tells the story of her transformation from someone who was skeptical of technology in the church. Then she went through a cancer diagnosis and treatment, and found that the strength of her Christian community was found online as she navigated that journey. And it's meant to be used in conversation. It's a good discussion starter. I think it's a useful tool for councils or congregations to navigate this. Start by having those conversations, by asking those questions. But I think reality is also going to set in when whenever the variants are done and the waves have subsided, who knows when that will be, but it'll happen. And I think reality is going to set in that the people just won't come back to the pews at the same levels they were on March 8th, 2020. Families have recognized that it's far easier to stay home on Sunday mornings than to load up the kids in the car and drive somewhere else. People have realized that they can connect with their church community online. They're going to have that expectation of it being of it being available. I'm not suggesting that most churches will experience a large drop-off in membership, but I think if we pull the rug out of digital ministry, we're going to find that we don't have the in-person communities that we once enjoyed and that we might assume that are going to come back someday.
I would agree with that assessment. I think that's wise.
I mean, I've got a 2-year-old at home. And so I remember trying to, before the pandemic started, the difficulty of getting a 6-month-old out the door for church was one thing. Now we've got a toddler and it's a whole other game when you have to chase her all the way around the yard to get her into the car to go to church. Sometimes it's just easier to say, you know what, we're going to watch on YouTube this week.
Well, that, and I mean, I think during, I guess, last September, I started a Zoom Bible study, and I can't really imagine ever going to an in-person Bible study again, just kind of for similar reasons. It's like, you know, oh, I have to get in the car, drive over there. I live in Dallas where everything is at least 20 or 30 minutes, you know, commute. So that turns an hour Bible study into 2 hours of my time. And, you know, right now, Thursdays at noon, I hop online. It's the middle of my workday, have a really good conversation. You know, it's just, it's more convenient. And I am been involved in Bible study much more in the last year than I was probably in the year before, you know? So,
yeah. Well, what you just named is the second commute problem. And I think it's going to get even worse. What studies of time during the pandemic have shown is that the workday has expanded. So people are working on average 1.3 hours longer now than they did March 2020. And what's going to happen when offices reopen? Well, I think people are going to find that their work days are still longer, but now they also have that average 30-minute commute on both sides of it. Mm-hmm. So can church really ask, you know, you get home from your 9-hour job, your 10 hours, including your commute, for you to get back in your car and then drive another 15 minutes to church? Perhaps of some who have the privilege to be able to do that. But ultimately, I think it's a matter of accessibility. And for most families in particular, for working professionals, having that accessibility of the online option is really an important statement about inclusivity and who we are called to be.
See, I think that's the word right there, inclusivity. It's kind of made us aware of some of the people that we were excluding, not necessarily purposely, but when it was always here, from the disabled community to, you know, how many committees is it easy for you to serve on at church in the evening if you have a child that you need to get to bed, you know, probably at the time the meeting's starting, you know? And so it's just, there's many more populations that we can include and bring in to worship and to serve, even, you know, serve on committees and things.
Yeah. And the reality is, like in my synod, the ELCA, we're not growing younger at the moment. And as we age as a synod, we're going to find more and more are unable to make it out on Sunday mornings. Yeah. I wish all of this digital technology would have been around after my grandparents moved to a retirement community that was 45 minutes away from the church where they had belonged for decades. Mm-hmm. And they felt, though they loved the retirement community, it distanced them from their church because they couldn't drive the 90 minutes to church on Sundays. And had all of this technology been around back then, they might have found that their lives and their faith lives would have been enriched because they wouldn't have lost that connection.
That's true. That is kind of a sad, you know, it's like if you're at that age and you're so plugged into a community and then it comes time that you need to move for various reasons. I've always hated that you're going to, you lose that connection to your church. That's, and at a time, I don't think you want to lose that connection. Correct. At a time in life.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I love that. This has been a great conversation. And unfortunately, we're like almost out of time today. So I'm going to ask you one more question. And just that's kind of this, if you just have one piece of advice for church leaders or, you know, want to talk about anything maybe I didn't ask about, kind of one parting wisdom, if you will, that you'd like to leave with our listeners.
I'll borrow from the author Simon Sinek and say, start with why. Use this time that we have now to think about what does digital ministry allow your ministry context to do? How does it allow you to reach out and to build relationships and to establish new connections? Name that and identify it and discern it, because you're going to need that information and a keen sense of awareness to that information in order to figure out how to do this work sustainably.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Ryan. I'm so grateful that you joined us today. I'd like to also thank our audience for listening. And I want to invite our audience to make sure that they follow us in their favorite podcast app or subscribe to the YouTube channel if they're watching online or watching on YouTube. Ryan, how can our listeners find and follow you online?
And they can find me at www.ryanpanzer.com. I have a weekly-ish newsletter. It depends how busy I get, running around after the toddler, if I truly get it out every week or not. But in that newsletter, we highlight the news and the stories, the issues and the success stories of digital ministry and ministry in a tech-shaped culture. The book is Grace in Gigabytes, Being Church in a Tech-Shaped Culture, and it's a great conversation guide for councils, for foundations and boards trying to navigate this. Be sure to check out the discussion questions at the end of each section. Even if you don't read the book, send me an email, send me a tweet, and I'll send you the discussion questions, and you can ask those to start the conversations.
Well, I like that. So send him a tweet, and we'll have links to his website. And his Twitter, so you can tweet at him and get the discussion questions, or I say read the book. I just started it this week, and I'll probably finish it this weekend, quite frankly. So I'm excited for your book, and thank you. I want to thank our audience for listening, and I want to invite them to connect with us in another way. We have a Facebook group. It is so cleverly titled, How We Do Digital Ministry. Invite you, there's a link in the show notes, invite you to come join us in that group. It is a place where you can discuss all things digital ministry with a cohort of colleagues across the country and world, for that matter, discuss all things digital while you're waiting for the next episode of How We Do Digital Ministry to drop. Until next week, I want to say peace and blessings to you all. Thank you.